Scotty is choking it down right now.
There's chunks in it.
It's all over his mustache.
This is death.
Oh. It tastes
I think he's plugging his nose for
Hugh's
sure.
He's having problems. Oh, my God.
Oh, Ziggy, this tastes
it's
like...
It's the aftertaste.
This tastes like liquid sweat sock. It's disgusting.
What, you do this for fun?
Yes, I do.
So have you done it this morning? Have you had your... I still don't know how to say the word. Sheep keever. You're drinking it right now. And you said... I don't know. I can't remember if this was on air or off air. Because I said, how do you drink that much sheep keever? Because we chugged it. And you said, it's a little shot glass. The glass is a lot smaller than it looks when you see it on FaceTime. That looks like a normal-sized glass. You have a full glass of sheep kefir, and you just took a drink, and you're not sitting there ready to puke.
It looks like a big cup, but it's got so much film in it. Like, what do you call it when it's, like, thick? That when you pour a little bit in a glass and you walk with it and it goes up the edges, you don't know where it's been and where it is. Do you know what I mean? It's got like the film on it.
That was one of the more scientific explanations
I've ever
come across.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, it's so thick that if it goes up the side of the glass, you don't know if it's actually part of the substance or is it just, did it just roll up the side of the cup?
Right,
I don't know. You explain that.
There's
then.
A thickness.
I don't know.
There's a thickness to it. There's a certain je ne sais quoi. That's can't be overstated. And there's a certain thickness to it. There's also, I thought Hugh hit the nail on the head when he said that it tasted like a sweat sock.
I'm not going to.
A used sweat sock.
It doesn't taste as good this morning. I don't know if that's from both of you yesterday, but I've taken a couple sips this morning, and it doesn't taste right. It tastes worse than it usually does.
Well, it's in your head now. It's in your head.
You are in my head.
So just to set the stage, in case you're listening for the first time and you're not entirely sure where we're going with this, on Monday the Chiefs played the Bills, and Hugh and I made a bet with Ziggy and Silent Vic, and Ziggy and Silent Vic would have shaved their beards if Buffalo had beaten Kansas City. Hugh and I were on the Bills Mafia train trying to appeal to the somewhat locals and thinking that the Bills are going to be the AFC East champs this year. So we took Buffalo to beat the defending Super Bowl champs, and we agreed that we would drink a glass of sheep kefir each because this is one of Ziggy's early morning snacks. And I made the mistake. So Adnan Virk was on the air with us. And I made the mistake before I poured my glass of sniffing. So I turned I opened the lid and I sniffed the bottle. And I almost gagged right on the spot.
Yeah, you guys did not do well with that yesterday. I don't blame you. The first time's a little weird. But if you went to a flavored cow kefir, its actual name, you call it kefir and it's in... That's in my head now, too.
Say it again.
What? Kefir.
I've been calling it kefir, like Kiefer Sutherland.
No, you've been saying kefir.
Oh.
I don't even know what that is. It's not right. You guys yesterday just made it look worse than it is. The chunks that are in it, yeah, that's a little strange, and they're in all of them. I get them as well. You got to chew them. You got to chew them and choke them down. And you guys didn't. Apparently, they ended up in the sink yesterday. I had a little birdie tell me that you guys didn't have those. You left those in the glass. So I don't even know if that counts anymore.
Excuse me. I drank mine. And the one that ended up...
You drank the chunks?
I drank the chunks of the kefir.
Yes.
So the bill, the bet has been paid off because of the Bills loss.
Don't, and you know, when I have a Ziggy lock, you just don't mess with that.
Okay, so I mean, do you have some kind of feel for tonight's game? I'm not. I don't care enough about the Giants and Eagles to make a bet with you. I'm not putting any
it's
more.
It's a little early to tell, but I might have something up my sleeve by the end of the show.
Oh, really?
It's a little early. Yeah, I feel like I'm Sam Rothstein in Casino right now. You're asking me about the games.
Are you conspiring? Like... Are you conspiring with Silent Vic behind the scenes? I know for a fact that Leap is already listening to the show. Tim Leeper will join us for the full 7 o'clock hour. So I know for a fact that he's already sitting there in his, well, hopefully he's fully adorned, just sitting there with his coffee, maybe a sheep kefir, listening to the program.
There's no way Leap ever drinks a kefir.
So you're not conspiring with him on the next bet. He'll be interested to hear that you hit a 101 mile an hour fastball.
I don't think he's going to be surprised at all. I think he knows. He knows.
He sees the athletic prowess.
Yeah, he's seen that. I'm sure he's not surprised at all. He's going to ask why I didn't go to 105 or 106.
Well, you tried, didn't you?
I know. They went by me. 104 went by me, and they're just like, okay, that's not good for anybody to watch. I mean, 104 was, I mean, I don't even 101, I pretty much closed my eyes. 90, you have an idea. 101, I pretty much closed my eyes. Like, that's not a shock to anyone, is it? That it was pretty much a guess. Like, I was pretty much swinging the bat, hoping to hit. The 90, you have an idea.
Well, we were in talking to Hugh when we were taking our swings. I said, look, you just got to decide where you're going to put your bat. Because Barker was on about the bat path, right? Where's your bat path going to be? And Hugh and I both swung and missed at our first couple of pitches. I went before Hugh and I said, hey, Hugh, think of it this way. Just put the bat in the same path each and every swing. And if the pitching machine is up on you a little bit or down on you a little bit, you're either going to swing underneath it or you're going to swing over top of it. You might foul tip it depending on the degree that the machine is off. But eventually, if it puts one just below the waist, above the knees, and that's where your bat path is, you're going to run into it. Because we can get the bat around and into the strike zone quickly enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we started to have a little bit more success. I will say this, and the videos have been going up on social media all week. You can check them out on the Fan's Twitter account at Fan590. I got to say, I would have come on this radio station the first thing and tried to come up with some excuse about how you didn't get it done. And I have to fully tip my cap to you. And I am on some kind of losing streak with our bets now. Between that and the Chiefs-Bills game, it's not good. It's not good. So I got to get you back. And I honestly, I'm not touching the Giants-Eagles game. So unless
you don't have anyone?
Who cares about the Giants and the Eagles?
What do you mean? The winner of this could win the division. Could win the NFC East.
Two crappy NFC East teams. The Eagles
The winner could imagine. You imagine if the Giants? Can you imagine? I can't imagine.
They're not going to win the division. It will be one of two. Do you want to make a bigger bet on that?
Who wins the division?
Well, I don't know. Like, the hard thing is it's either going to be
betting on a team that's going to be.
It's either going to be Dallas. It's either going to be Dallas or Philly. If it's not Dallas or Philly, I've got to come up with something that I'm willing to do, like bungee jump or something. I'm not ever going near the Mark Davis haircut thing again, but I'll come up with something crazy and silly. That if the Giants or the Washington football team, and did you read that the Washington football team may keep its nickname at football team in 2021? I'm telling you right now, the Washington football team, that needs to be their forever nickname from here on forward. Just keep it going. I love that nickname.
Yeah, I don't mind the football team. I don't mind the
I mean, what are they nickname at the end of the day? No, but there's no actual San Francisco 49er who's a 49er. There may actually be some Dallas Cowboys who would consider themselves Cowboys if they've got the hats and the spurs on their boots.
Yeah. I don't mind them if they keep it. you know, football team. I like it, actually.
There are no Philadelphia players who are actually Eagles, but every Washington player is on a football team. I think it's the first truly accurate nickname in the history of professional sports. Who do you play for? I play for the football team.
Well, you don't say that. You say the city where you're playing. I mean, that's, you're not going to say I play for the football team.
I play for the Cowboys. I play for the Jets.
That's different.
Everybody knows what that is. I play for the football team.
You're not going to say football team. If I'm playing for Washington, I'm gonna, and our name is the football team, I'm not going to go. I'm pretty sure the players have a good joke with it, and that's all they talk about with their family. Like, that was a joke for the first 3 weeks. But, I mean, if we're talking, you're not going to say I play for the football team. You're going to say I play in Washington. You're going to say football team. They're going to say, where is that? I mean, football team, that could be anything.
Oh, could be anything. But it's Washington. and it's the best that an alleged football team is the one that has the nickname, the football team. So, Ziggy, if you could cross the border next year, you can cross the border. It's just you got to quarantine when you come back.
Yeah, you can cross the border. You're talking to the U.S.?
Well, I'm just saying, would you go and hang out in a hotel room in Louisville, Kentucky, and do this show in this very same way? We're looking at each other right now over FaceTime. We're talking on our studio quality mics. Would you do the show from Louisville, Kentucky, and be our Raptors insider? And would you go to each and every home game at the KFC Yum Center in Louisville, the home of the Louisville Cardinals basketball teams, where the Raptors may call home next year if our border remains closed with the United States? The KFC Yum Center.
That's not real.
It's finger licking good. Finger licking
good. That's not real.
Yes, it is.
It's the name of the arena.
It's on Wikipedia. Check it out. KFC Yum Center.
I'm sure it's all real. Aren't you the one that says, oh, yeah, it's on Wikipedia. It must be real.
Isn't
half of it fake?
The New Orleans Pelicans play in the Smoothie King Center.
That's different. There actually is a Smoothie King. Well, what's wrong with that?
There's KFC. There is a KFC.
The Yum Center?
Well, Yum is, I don't know if it's...
I don't think that's real, guys. I think we're being taken on that one. I would check that one out. Okay. I'd fact check that one.
I think per our friend Hugh Burrell, who's recovered from the Sheep Keeper, that the Yum brands, it's Y-U-M exclamation point, Yum owns KFC. Yum brands owns KFC. So it's the KFC Yum Center. And that's got me thinking for our next bet. You got to dust off a bucket of KFC chicken.
I was going to ask... Were you following me yesterday, or did you have someone following me? This is kind of funny that you would bring this up.
Well, I have a tendency to try to spy on people, yeah.
I ate 2 KFC chicken burgers yesterday. Plant-based, the chicken burgers. They're the spicy ones from Light Life, and they are great. Burgers. Let me tell you this.
How is something plant-based? But it's also chicken.
I guarantee you, if I put them up with a regular chicken and the plant-based chicken, you have no idea which is which. How about that? You want to bet on that?
Well, I would have to go and make the purchase to make sure that it's real chicken.
No. I'll pick them up. We'll put them on a plate. We're going to cut them in half. You get to eat half of one, half of the other, and you won't be able to tell the difference between them. How about that?
Okay.
It was that good. And then we'll put something on the line.
So
we'll
it was juicy. It was juicy.
It
delicious.
Was like crispy, delicious. The sauces were great.
I think
the buns are amazing.
But I don't trust your ability to judge the juiciness of a burger anymore because you're like, well... My plant-based burger is just as juicy as a hamburger. And no, it's not. I've never had a plant-based burger that isn't too dry.
I'm telling you right now, you haven't done the A&W one yet, have you? You haven't done that?
No, but
I
haven't.
There's no way you wouldn't be able to tell that one either.
Okay.
I'm telling you right now, A&W burgers, you can't tell. And this KFC chicken burger, I can't believe you brought that up because I did have it yesterday. And I... I added a large fry. I didn't even make it through a large fry. And the fries were tasty too. I mean, I don't eat a KFC that often.
You really are a fast food addict.
Well, what else? I can't go into a restaurant. I'm not going to sit there and wait for takeout. Like, what do you eat?
You go to the grocery store. Open. You go to the grocery store. I do it once a week. I do it once a week, and I buy a week's worth of food. It's this
I do
crazy
that as well.
Plan. It's this crazy plan that I have where I buy enough food that it lasts for the week.
Yeah, I honestly, I didn't have time to cook yesterday. I had to go to a doctor's appointment, and it was just like, and I'm like, I got to pick up something quick. I heard about this KFC burger, and I'm like, I have to try it out. It's this plant. I've had it a couple times, but they have a couple different versions. There's a regular, there's a spicy. So I had the spicy this time, and it was, I'm telling you, you can't tell the difference. But anyway, yeah, so back to the Yum Center.
Here's the thing. My first reaction was they got to play somewhere. And if you're not allowed to cross the border or if you have to quarantine for 14 days, then obviously Toronto's not going to be an option, right? Because visiting teams will be coming in. The Raptors will be coming home from road trips and all that stuff. And the federal government ended up making the decision not to allow the Blue Jays to play their home games this past summer in Toronto. Of all of the places in the United States, and there are 50 states, I'll remind you of this, of all of the places in the United States, the state of Kentucky would be one of the spots that I would consider to be least like Toronto. Kentucky. The Raptors might play in Kentucky.
They're taking it serious in Kentucky right now.
I don't think they're talking about it much right in Kentucky.
No,
right?
They are.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, Kentucky Sports Radio. I'm on a website right now, and it's on all these Kentucky Louisville websites. I'm not kidding.
So they're,
because I'm going to tell you right now, the Yum Center is real. This is a doctored picture. It's real.
Dude, I read up on it.
I read it too, and I was like, okay, this is fake. I had to find a picture, and I finally found a picture. Right. It's the KFC Yum Center.
Right, and it's a
that
gorgeous.
Is not a joke.
It's a gorgeous arena in downtown Louisville
nice.
That opened about 10 years ago, and it's the home to both Louisville Cardinals, the University of Louisville basketball teams. So it probably doesn't have an 18,000 seat capacity, but it certainly could be home or a temporary home to an NBA team.
I thought when I heard Yum Center, I'm like, okay, guys, like this is not real. Like, but it's legit. Yeah. I don't mind it. Like what they went down and play in a bubble in Orlando in Disney World. Like, is this much worse? Like, is this that crazy of an idea?
Well, Silent Vic says it seats 22,000. So it's a massive, massive arena. No, it's not a wild idea. Of all the places in the United States, Louisville would not be at the top of my list. But if it's got an arena, if it's got an NBA-quality arena, and Kentucky, I'm going to guess Kentucky has more lax restrictions on gatherings and stuff in COVID. They might be able to get some fans into that building. I guess it's as good a place to go as any, and I suppose it doesn't matter. And it serves another purpose, which is it keeps the Raptors in the time zone. So the Raptors game, it's not like they're playing late games out west or anything. We'll be able to watch them if they're playing in Louisville, Kentucky at a normal time, and we won't be any closer to the arena than we otherwise would be because fans wouldn't be allowed in Scotiabank Arena anyway.
Yeah, what other options? I'm hearing like Seattle is an option, but then you're having the Raptors on the West Coast, like you just said, at
right,
a reasonable
but Key
hour.
Arena, the remake of Key Arena isn't ready yet, and you've got and you've got the screwed up time zone situation. Like to me, if there would be an option in upstate or Western New York, that would work best. If they did from a proximity point of view, if they could somehow share Little Caesars Arena in Detroit with the Pistons. You know, this isn't...
How about even going to How about going to Buffalo?
Well, that's what I said. Upstate or Western New York. If there was,
I didn't know if that's what you meant.
Yeah, if that was, okay. If there was an option there, you know, could you work out a deal with the Sabres? But you'd have to put down a hardwood. Between hockey games.
You know what other cities are kind of being floated around?
Honolulu. Like
Mexico City.
Okay.
But I don't know how would that work going to Mexico for no?
Well, you'd live there and play there. And I do believe Mexico City is far enough east in that country that it's not wildly out of our time zone. I think it might be.
I think it's 1 hour out.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a bunch of options here. It I guess it's nice to be wanted.
I just think Louisville's a good spot. Like, it's, you want to, like, do you want to go to a Seattle or New York City or Detroit, or would you rather go to some smaller city that has a great rink? It's more of a community than a big city, and enjoy your time there. Like, is that not what you would want as a player? That's what I would want. I'd want a Louisville over a bigger city. Just have the facilities, make sure they're great. You can have the fans are allowed in. We're going to be able to fill it. It's going to be a decent size arena. That's kind of what I would want. I wouldn't want to go to a big city.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the player, right? If you've got a family and they're coming with you, you want a place. I think all that they would want is a place to be settled, a place to call home. That was one of the first challenges the Blue Jays encountered early on in their regular season, before they landed in Buffalo for that series against Miami in, what, the second week of August or whatever it was. The first 2.5-3 weeks of the regular season, they were playing home games in Washington, and I think that Philly was on the schedule. Like, they just were out of a suitcase all the time. I think what you want, wherever it is to feel like, even if it's temporary, you've got a home. If we play a 5-game homestand, we're going to be in the same city on the same routine for the week and a half that homestand lasts.
Yeah, I like it. They're not going to come to Toronto. It's a good spot. I don't want to go to Seattle. I'm Mexico City. Like, how do you know what's going on in Mexico? Like, I know those two cities are being thrown around, but I like this play. Let's if they can't come to Toronto, Let's do it. I'm on board with
this.
Let's
put you up in the Residence Inn, which is likely nearby the KFC Yum Center, and you will be our Raptors correspondent / morning show co-host.
I'll go down there. You want me to go down there? I'll go down there. You know what's good about Louisville, Kentucky? It's 128 miles from Corbin, Kentucky. You know what Corbin is?
I have no idea what Corbin, Kentucky is.
You have no idea.
I might know
Scott
once you
MacArthur,
tell me.
MacArthur, you disappoint me sometimes.
Is there some big-ass golf course that you've played with?
No, but after what I did yesterday, Corbin, Kentucky is the home of KFC. So, and I have been before. I have been to the original Kentucky Fried Chicken in Corbin, Kentucky.
Does it have one of those buckets swirling outside the restaurant? You know, the big...
No, it does not have a mechanical bucket outside. This thing's like... The first KFC, how old is it? It's like 100 years old.
Well, it's older than me because I remember having KFC when I was a little kid. So, and I'm not quite 100 yet. Some mornings I wake up and feel it.
It's old though. It's like an old built. It's the same as all the KFCs now. You know how they have the little window into the kitchen?
Mm-hmm.
That's from the original KFC. Like, that's what it's like at the original one, and they do that in all the locations. Just thought you needed to know that.
Well, you are...
Well, we're talking about, yeah.
You are a fast food aficionado. You know, for all this plant-based and healthy stuff that you're up to, you know more about fast food history than anybody I've ever met. Justin Bourne and David Amber will join us at 8:30. We'll do Hockey Central at 8:30. Bourne's got some thoughts on this whole Chicago Blackhawks situation. They sent out a couple of days ago a letter to their fans that was not entirely like, but also not dissimilar to that letter that New York Rangers sent out to their fan base about their rebuild three or four years ago. And where is it all going in Chicago? What's the future of Taves and Kane and Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, some of the older players in Chicago? And what would they be reacting to, or how would they be reacting to a letter like that? Clark Judge of Sports Illustrated and the Talk of Fame Network on NFL Week 7. We got the Eagles and the Giants tonight, but we got a ton of stories too. Ryan Fitzpatrick is heartbroken that Tua Tagovailoa is going to take over for the Miami Dolphins. I like this. It signifies that the Dolphins just are not veering from their plan, regardless of their record and their playoff possibilities in the AFC East. We'll get Clark's take on the Tua situation, the situation in Dallas, and are the New England Patriots going to be able to bounce back from their 2-3 start? Josh Toley at 7:30, and that'll create a roundtable because Tim Leeper, the Blue Jays, former Blue Jays first base and outfield coach, will be with us for the full 7 o'clock hour. We'll get into the World Series. We got a series, kids. It's 1-1, the Dodgers and the Rays. And Hugh Burrell has just sat down. He looks okay. He looks 24 hours recovered from the sheep kefir. We will Burrell the lead next. Tim Leeper for a full hour at the top of the 7 o'clock hour, and then Josh Toley will join us for a roundtable at 7:30. Clark Judge, Justin Bourne, and Anthony Stewart is off.
He's skating.
Doing work.
Did you hear what Anthony Stewart tweeted the other day? He said that Kapanen's better than Nylander. He tweeted that.
I saw the tweet.
Is that a troll?
I think that's exactly what he said.
He messaged me after.
Will
snapping. I'm like, I trolled him because he was made. I actually agree with his point. He was saying that, yeah, if you can get another D-man with Kapanen and keep him, and then you're going to have to move on from Nylander, that's your move. But I just tweeted out Stewie things and people went off, and he sent me a message that I had a long enough day the day before, because when he tweeted that, his Twitter apparently shut down.
I can't believe that people got angry on Twitter over that. It is not Anthony Stewart today. It's Justin Bourne and David Amber for Hockey Central at 8:30. And the Thursday leadoff troll poll is out. If the Raptors have to play in Louisville or in some other non-Canadian location next season, it would put them at a disadvantage or no advantage or disadvantage. Get your votes in at Scotty Mac Thinks and Mike Zygmantis at Hugh W. Burrell. If they play in Louisville, Hugh, get ready. We're going to be hearing a lot of Louisville.
Yeah, it's Louisville.
Louisville.
Yes.
It's Louisville.
Louisville? Not yep. Louisville?
No,
it's Louisville, Kentucky. Louisville, yeah. Kentucky.
I've stayed at a hotel right, like...
Next to the Yum Center?
Right near there, yeah. Not a great area, but it's a nice enough city. They have the Muhammad Ali Museum there. They also have a Louisville Slugger factory. Imagine that. They make Louisville Sluggers in Louisville. Who knew? Best part about it, it's like basically right near the Bourbon Trail, so it's fantastic. Like, go visit.
The Bourbon Trail? Oh, it's just a bunch of places with...
It's all the distilleries, and it's great. It's like a stretch of highway. It just
feels like a pathway you could walk where there's
it's a little longer than that.
little shots of bourbon that you can pick up and throw back as you're walking and then stumbling.
Sounds like heaven.
Let's Burrell the lead, Hugh.
Yeah, let's show. By the way, don't eat almonds just before you go on the air. I struggled with that last one.
Those were chunkier than the sheep kefir chunks.
Oh, by the way, I know we're digressing here a lot, but Leeper texted me and said, you guys had to drink sheep kerfuffle. So, Zig, you're going to have to explain to him what the difference is between kefir and kerfuffle.
Leep was never one for the sports science and the advanced energy drinks, you know?
You don't think he had the protein shakes lined up? No?
Gross. Well, hopefully they were better than what we choked back yesterday. All right, boys, the Rays tied up the World Series with a 6-4 win over the Dodgers last night. Is a guy who'd been struggling mightily who led the way, second baseman Brandon Lau.
And now the pitch. Swing and a fly ball, well hit into left field. Going back is Taylor, all the way back towards the wall. It's gone! A two-run homer for Brandon Lau, his second of the night, and the Rays have a 5-0 lead.
To say that my mind wasn't going different places during that kind of struggle would be lying to you. You know, there were times that I wasn't feeling too good, but, you know, that's what is so great about this team, this coach and stuff like that. You know, as soon as I started dragging my feet, you know, somebody was right there to pick me up and tell me to, you know, focus up and let's get going, and just pure joy.
Just pure joy. So it's a different series now, tied at a game apiece. Game three goes tomorrow, by the way. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Rays have to be feeling pretty good about this one after getting pounded in game one.
They do, and their two-hitter, Brandon Lau, finally snaps out of it. And Kevin Barker was on our show, and I know he's been talking a lot about this on Baseball Central with Jeff Blair about Lau needing to get going. I thought Kevin Cash was sticking with a Brandon Lau in the two spot for way too long. I mean, at some point, if he doesn't get going, you're going to run out of time. But it's a big night for the Rays. Their challenge will be, can they knife their way through the best of the Dodgers starting pitching? And we're going to see Walker Buehler, and we're going to see more Clayton Kershaw, and they're going to have to win some games when those guys pitch.
Yeah. Again, game three tomorrow night, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan, NFL, the Thursday nighter. Oh, man, it's a good one. Can't wait. Ugh. The 1-5 Giants at the 1-4-1 Eagles.
It's your team's division, Hugh. Be nice to
them. Yeah, if the Giants win, Cowboys are still in first. The Eagles win, they take over top spot. Jeez. They'd be in first place with a 2-4-1 record. Wow. Welcome to 2020.
Do you think your Washington football team could win that division?
They're still in it. with a 1-5 record, they're a game out of first place. Yeah. As bizarre as that sounds, right? No, they're not going to win. They're an awful, awful, awful.
I can't remember what year it was, Hugh. It was around 2000, maybe a little before, a little after, when the NFL went to the four divisions in each conference, four teams in each division. 7 wins has been the worst number of wins to win. It's happened more than once.
Yeah, and 2020 just said, hold my beer.
But we might see 6 here.
Yeah. The Seahawks are looking at signing Antonio Brown, whose 8-game suspension for violating the league's conduct policy is up next week. ESPN's Adam Schefter says the Seahawks, they're not the only ones who are interested.
There are other teams also interested in Antonio Brown's services, but it looks like there's a possibility that he could be back as soon as week 9, and Seattle is one of the teams making plans right now or preparations to pursue him. Antonio Brown spent part of the offseason working out with Russell Wilson and Geno Smith. He's good friends with both Seahawks quarterbacks. He's remained in contact with them. They've told him how he could fit in Seattle, what it would be like to bring him to the Seahawks. Can you imagine Antonio Brown in Seattle playing for the Seahawks? What a combination that could and would be.
As no one's doubting Brown's talent, he is a fantastic receiver, but he's also had numerous off-field transgressions, which include an ongoing sexual assault investigation. Last time Brown played, he was wearing a Patriots uniform, 4 catches, 56 yards, and a touchdown. So here we go. Antonio Brown in Seattle.
I think it's going to be tough for a team to bring him in until all of this off-field stuff goes. Like, how can you bring a guy like that in when he has all this stuff going on off the field? I don't see it yet. He's the best talent not playing right now. I get that. He's incredible, right? I love watching him, but how much heat are you going to take as an organization by bringing him in? You're going to have to. I understand Seattle is a spot because guys have trained with him and they know him. That's going to have to be the case for a team to take a chance. They're going to need players in their own organization to vouch for him, almost to say that, hey, this is a guy we think can work. We'll vouch for him. He's learned his lesson. once everything gets dealt with off the field, I think this guy can be a good player for us.
Yeah, Ziggy, the NFL has proven time and time again that if it comes down to ability or character, teams will always pick ability over character. Fitzmagic is over in Miami as the Dolphins promoted Tua Tagovailoa to the starting quarterback job ahead of Ryan Fitzpatrick. Now, Fitzpatrick led the Fish to a 3-3 record this season, said yesterday he was heartbroken, and the news caught him by surprise.
This profession is interesting in that I got fired yesterday, and then my day of work today consisted of me in Zoom meetings listening to the guy that fired me, and then, you know, locked in a spaced out room, you know, with my replacement for 4 hours today. So there aren't a whole lot of jobs that are like that, but I know how difficult it is to play the quarterback position. And I know that that room is so important to the guy that's playing in terms of everybody having your back and pulling in the same direction. So, you know, today's the day to digest a little bit, and we'll get away for the bye a little bit. But yeah, I mean, once this thing starts up again, you know, I've got to do my best for Tua to help him out.
Yeah, so Fitzpatrick losing the starting job in Miami, basically now he knows what Trent Edwards was going through back in Buffalo in 2009. As for Tua, the kid was nothing but gracious when asked about Fitzpatrick.
It kind of hurts me in a way to see Fitz hurt. You know, I'm just very, very, you know, lucky to have someone like Fitz in my corner, regardless of the situation we're in right now. You know, he's just, you know, I hate to say it like this, but it is like this. It's like a father and son.
Just some nice words by Tua. And Scotty, you like the Dolphins kind of sticking to the plan here, not getting mesmerized by that 3-3 record, a chance to possibly make the playoffs.
Yeah, I feel badly for Fitzpatrick because this is not a merit-based thing. He has been playing well enough to continue to start as a Dolphins quarterback. But Tua here is the future.
Yep.
And they're 3-3, so they're going to thrust him into a playoff push after the bye week. And the Los Angeles Rams and Aaron Donald will be a pretty good first opponent.
Yep.
For him in his first career start. But this is bigger picture for Miami, a team in the AFC East to keep an eye out on, because not only do they have their own first rounder next April, they've got Houston's first and second rounders from the Laremy Tunsil trade more than a year ago. The Dolphins are turning a corner and they want their guy in. And I would imagine that this was the plan, barring injury or something else unforeseen. This was the plan when the season started. Tua's in after the bye. They didn't think they were going to be 3-3 or maybe in the division race, but they're sticking to their plan because the bigger picture is what matters.
Yeah, and Fitzpatrick, who's played for a number of teams, he's a good guy for Tua to learn from. He's been in so many different systems. He's gone through the highs and the lows. He's been the starter. He's been the backup. So anything that Tua needs to know about this role. Yeah, he's made his money. Still, though, it's got to you know, hurt the ego a little bit, but he'll be all right. Quite the day for Odell Beckham Jr. Oh, OBJ. First, he was banned for 2 years by his alma mater, LSU, after handing out cash on the sidelines after the Tigers beat Clemson in the national title game back in January. And then he was asked if he feared contracting COVID-19. OBJ offered up this little nugget.
No, not in an arrogant way. I just don't think COVID can get to me. I don't think it's going to enter this body. I don't want no parts of it. It don't want no parts of me. I think it's a mutual respect.
Now, I want Vic to play that again. I really want you to listen to what he says here. Vic?
No, not in an arrogant way. I just don't think COVID can get to me. I don't think it's going to enter this body. I don't want no parts of it. It don't want no parts of me. I think it's a mutual respect.
Isn't that how you don't get it, though?
Ask nicely.
You come to an agreement with the virus.
Yeah, you ask nicely, and that's it. That's not right. That's not the way it works. I'm confused now.
This is a guy who missed practice last Friday because he felt ill.
It was a mutual respect.
It was a negative test, and he played, yes, but it has been less than a week since there was at least a scare that he may have contracted COVID-19.
But it's impossible because COVID would never dare to
to enter that body.
Hugh, if we ask nicely, we can have these vinyl barriers taken down.
The shower curtains?
The shower curtains.
Jeez. I'm looking through two of them right now at you. They were puke shields yesterday.
They were. Look out for the splatter.
By the way, I took what was left of that sheep kefir or kefir home. 5 Feet of Fury wanted no part of that. Zero.
Did she sniff the bottle?
Yeah, she did. Then she gave me like the look of death and I just quietly put it away.
And you said it's like the healthiest thing in the world you can drink.
Yeah. So many health benefits.
Apparently it's all the probiotics which make it smell and taste like crap.
How many probiotics? There's like 70 million.
There's like 20 million probiotics a glass. That's what you need in your... It's part of the nutrition.
I think there's more.
That's
than
how many probiotics are in it.
It seems like a lot.
Yeah, there's 170,000 million probiotics. And then you puke and get sick, and you got to take an antibiotic. Evens out.
There's a prebiotic, a probiotic, and an antibiotic.
And there you go.
Is there a postbiotic?
Yeah. Just ask nicely. Mutual respect. 416-870-0590, 416-870-0590. It is time to play All or Nothing. We have $100 in Untucket gift cards up for grabs. We want you to be the contestant so that we can give you the prize. Get to dialing. We play coming up. After that monster losing streak that we had, and we got an $800 winner a couple of days ago, we're now on a two-game winning streak in All or Nothing. So today's jackpot is $100 in Untucket gift cards. All or Nothing is three true or false questions. Get them all right or get them all wrong. So if you get the first one wrong, don't hang up. Just means you got to get the next two intentionally incorrect. We'll go a bit of the way around the horseshoe to Grimsby and Logan. Good morning, Logan.
Good morning. How you doing?
We're doing well. Good luck to you. Ziggy's got question number one.
The NFC East is full of teams under 500, and the NFC West is full of teams at or over 500. True or false?
That's true.
That is correct. Are we going through all these teams? Or are we just going to say that's correct?
Well, right now, Dallas is the leader of the NFC East at 2-4, and the 49ers are in last place in the NFC West, and their record is 3-3. So that sums it up nicely. Logan, you're in good shape. You got to get the next two correct, and the gift cards are yours.
Okay. All right, Logan, here we go, buddy. Here's your second question. Former Maple Leaf Gary Roberts has been hired by the Seattle Kraken. True or false?
That's true.
It is true. In fact, he is the Kraken sports science and performance consultant.
Are you a basketball guy, Logan?
Yeah, fair amount. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I think you're in good shape here. Listen closely. In coaching news, the New Orleans Pelicans have hired Jeff Van Gundy to be their new head coach. Jeff Van Gundy is the new head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans. True or false?
I actually don't know. This is... I'm going to go false.
Good man.
Okay.
Good guess.
A Van Gundy brother is the new head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans, but it is Stan Van Gundy.
I guess you could say Logan is running away with an Untucket gift card.
Oh, my God. Congratulations, Logan and Grimsby. There is some footage of Stan Van Gundy on Instagram and Twitter right now from his days coaching the Orlando Magic. Mm-hmm. There is some practice footage. You need the visuals, too, to go with the audio, but he's bouncing the ball between his legs, running up the court. and he's talking about having moves.
Oh, wow.
We'll find the audio. You need the visual to go with the audio, but the audio itself may live. It is some of the most specific coaching that you'll ever hear. We'll dig that audio up. It's all over the internet. But Stan Van Gundy, yeah, is the new head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans. Imagine if Tim Leeper had been sitting up for a full hour listening to this show, and then we told him right before 7 o'clock, nah, don't bother. We don't need you today.
Yeah.
I have the dark side of me wants to do that.
So do it.
That's mean.
It's That's cruel, mean. Isn't it?
He'll just go back to bed.
Yeah, it's pretty mean.
Tim Leeper,
I actually don't think he'd care. We'll I think ask, he'd be like, okay, I had my coffee. I'm good.
I'm gonna ask this question of Tim Leeper when he joins us at the top of the next hour. Have you and Dustin May ever been seen in the same room? Tim Leeper next. Josh Tolley will jump in at 7:30. Up the CanCon, little Brian Adams. I think, Ziggy, we got to get some of the immediate, potentially less important business with Tim Leeper out of the way first. But before we get into the real meat and potatoes of the next hour, and Josh Tolley will join us, make it a roundtable at 7:30. Here he is, the former first base and outfield coach of the Blue Jays, Tim Leeper. I'm so glad you quit Twitter, because Ziggy and I are the ones looking at the two photos. Tim Leeper, Dustin May. Have they ever been in the same room? We can just harass you online now, and you have no idea it's happening.
At least you didn't compare me to Carrot Top. When he walks in the game, he looks like the Carrot Top comedian that's all on HGH and everything right now.
You poor gingers, eh? You just can't catch a break.
The world's against us. I'm pulling for them and Justin Turner. These are my favorite players in baseball right now.
Okay. The world's against you. Last quick bullet point before we get to more serious business. You're not going to suddenly appear in the Borat film, are you? You're not going to be an unwitting star of the Borat film?
No, like the guy from the NRA or
the former mayor of New York City.
The former mayor of New York City. Yes, yeah. I'm not gonna fall for that. Okay. But it's good to know that the people in charge are falling for that.
Yes, well, exactly. totally bright. So Ziggy hit 101, dude. He didn't just hit 90; he hit 101. You talked to Eugene Melnyk, and you thought it was going to happen. I love it.
I knew the whole time. I really had a good feeling about it. But here's one thing I'm figuring out about Ziggy now, because I've done this for a few months now. Like, he soft sells everything, and he's kind of winning the battle right here. Because I think there was probably a lot of preparation that went into this. And the bets, like, there's the bets. He gets you guys to do things. And when he loses a bet, he doesn't do anything. He ate vegetarian Taco Bell. That's not a commitment to the bet right there. And now he's got you guys drinking the goat kerfuffle. And I don't know if that's, I don't think that's fair. And you know, he's dumb like a fox, and he's soft playing you guys, and you guys need to stand up for yourself.
Is he,
and do better. Like, I am so on you, and I'm going to find out about those salsa lessons too. This is really driving me
nuts. Is he the leadoff version of John Gibbons? Dumb like a fox, right? Smarter than we all think.
Very much so. We were talking about it on my group chat yesterday. So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Which, we got to get into that. Has he ever given up the names of his group chat people?
Who's your friend? Ben Ackerton.
No,
your high school
I
friend,
can't
Ben
talk
Ackerton.
About anybody on the group chat. We can't.
Well,
no,
I can't talk
no
about
names.
Mine either.
There's no names. We're not naming anybody in the group chat.
Who did you? What name did you drop yesterday of just a random buddy of yours, Ziggy, that I said had to be in the group chat? Ben Ackerton or?
Oh, Rob Ackerman.
Rob Ackerman. There you go. Rob Ackerman. Rob Ackerman, he's definitely in the group chat. He's definitely in the group chat.
He could be in the group chat. We actually, me and him used to go to Jays games in the early 90s together. His family had, because we were talking about, their family had the Leafs tickets in the gardens. And they used to have game. They used to have tickets at the Sky Dome back then. 92, 93, 94. So, yeah. No, hey, Leap, I mean, yeah, the Taco Bell, they didn't know there was vegetarian taco. That was the best part about that. They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to get him. He's got to go and eat meat tacos from Taco Bell. Wait for this. I actually have gone back to Taco Bell and had vegetarian. Like, it's great food. Like, I can't believe people who have been missing out on Taco Bell. It is awesome vegetarian tacos. Earlier in the show, Leap, I was telling Scotty he wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a spicy veggie chicken burger and a regular chicken burger. And I'm like, I think there's something there that we need to kind of develop. But yeah, Scotty loses all. Scotty's scared to bet with me, I think, now. I think he's going to be, he's a little worried when I come with one of my Ziggy locks, my NFL picks, because now I'm perfect still. And Scotty still has to go in net too. Let's not forget about that. Let's keep that one alive.
You got to come out for that, Leap. You got to make the trip down to the big city to watch me try to stop.
Leap, can you
pucks.
Skate?
I can skate. I can skate. I'm not great, but I can skate. I could probably That's stay on my need. Feet and get in net too.
Perfect. No, you just got to stand up, and then you got to be able to fire a puck about six, or you got to fire a puck about four
I'll tell you,
and a half feet high.
I'll tell you what, Leap, and this is not me trying to take some of the attention away from what will be my less than stellar goaltending skills. But between Ziggy and his two or three U of T players who will be firing pucks right at my face mask, you are invited. Let's invite Leap to be a part of this. You can
I just
be,
did.
Yeah, you can be the fourth shooter. Be the fourth shooter.
No, there's no cap on shooters. I can bring as many shooters. There was never any cap on any of the shooters.
We'll open it up to the listeners then.
Let's bring a listener. Okay, just, I get one listener.
You get
done.
Give us a negative COVID test. We'll play by the COVID rules.
Negative test. You got to wear a mask, and we're gonna bring out one listener on the. Well, that could be dangerous.
That could be very dangerous.
Send your exit
on,
velocity.
We gotta talk about this one for a second. You got to be able to skate. Like, I don't want somebody getting hurt. Like, that's my. That would be bad.
I don't want somebody getting hurt, he says. And here
not
I
you.
Am
somebody
thinking
else.
About... Not
I
you.
Don't care about
yeah, I don't
you.
Care about you. Hernia.
I care about our listeners,
torn
buddy.
Groin.
Don't worry about you. We can send you. I can get somebody to fix you up. I don't want our listeners to
I
get
don't
injured.
Think
Come on.
So, I don't think somebody who skates like a baby learning how to walk, Ziggy, is going to volunteer to be a part of this. I think it's going to be the ringer. On,
Let's bring someone out then.
On the beer league team. It's going to be a beer leaguer. It's going to be...
Yeah, well, that's fine. We're gonna bring one listener out. I'm serious. Like, I'm not kidding around. I get to choose who comes.
Sure.
Just, and I'm bringing one listener.
He's charming you. See, he's already got the guy in place. This is great, Zig. You almost bought me in on this. He's got a guy. He's got a guy that goes 120 off the stick, and he's gonna get you.
We gotta pull a Leap out of how long do you stay in Muskoka for?
What about Leap? Your buddy Ben Ackerman? Have him come out.
You want Rob Ackerman to come out? I'll bring Rob Ackerman out.
Yeah.
No, but Rob Ackerman's a buddy of mine. We got to bring, like, I want to bring a listener that none of us know.
You said there's no limit on shooters. We could end up with, as long as we're COVID compliant,
okay.
We could have 70 people there.
Let's put the list out. We got Leap.
6 feet apart.
We've got Rob Ackerman from the group chat. And then we're going to bring out one listener.
Okay. And you got a couple U of T players, at least.
The U of T guys can't come out.
Oh, they can't come.
It's closed. The whole thing's closed.
Okay,
we can use the facility, but no one. Yeah, the players aren't allowed to come out. So that's changed. Unless the rules, the OUA and UFT rules change, then they can come out. But as of right now, the players are not allowed on the ice.
Before we get to the World Series,
that thing.
What are we talking about? I didn't say. I'll tell you what. I'm in the wrong career if I can make you laugh with that line. I should be at Yuck Yucks right now doing stand up and just I grab the microphone.
It was the whole conversation before
we get to the World Series.
It was the whole conversation. Sorry, go ahead.
I want you and Ziggy to comment on this. A bar stool guy tweeted this out 17 hours ago. So this would have been what, mid afternoon yesterday. And I'll quote it. I have a take. Is always a dangerous way to start a tweet. I have a take. Marcus Stroman is going to be the steal of the offseason. Teams that have a need for pitching and don't bid on him are going to wish they did. That garnered a lot of response, including from Marcus Stroman, who has been known at different times in his life, 10, 12, 14, 16 times a day, to tweet search his own name. And he ended up responding. And in the thread, he made this comment about the New York Yankees pitching staff. This is Stroman now. Besides Gerrit Cole, there's no current Yankee pitcher who will be anywhere in my league over the next 5 to 7 years. Their pitching always folds in the end. That lineup and payroll should be winning World Series left and right. Yet they're in a drought, LOL. Now, he's getting ratioed for that particular tweet, 712 replies to 337 retweets, although the 3,000 likes, I suppose, evens it out. I think Marcus Stroman would give a limb, would give his left nut to pitch for the New York Yankees. I really do. I think Stroman was pissed when he got traded to the Mets. I think he wanted to be a New York Yankee first and foremost. He's a Long Island kid, so kind of a quasi New York City guy. He wanted to be a Yankee, and he was mad when he got traded to a bad Mets team. This is an impending free agent who does not strike a lot of hitters out, and we all know everybody's velocity and strikeout obsessed when it comes to pitching in this day and age. He didn't pitch in 2020 because he decided to opt out, which was his right, the COVID situation. So he has not thrown a major league pitch in a year and a half, and he's a free agent. This is not exactly a way that you endear yourself to the New York Yankees. I think he wants to pitch for the Yankees, and yet he's calling them out on Twitter, Leap.
Yeah, his future teammates maybe not going to be too happy with that. You know what's funny, though? We say a lot of things with Stroh and the stuff that he does, and it's not, like, for everybody, obviously. But in terms of him, like, managing his career and getting what he wants, and it's actually kind of paid off for him. I mean, we're in that kind of era of sports where this stuff kind of works. And you're coming out, and there's only probably two free agent pitchers that are, like, are really on people's radar, and it's him and Bauer. Obviously, Bauer has pitched, you know, lights out for the last 2 years. But this is calculated by him, and it kind of works. And none of us probably, like, would ever go about it this way. But, you know, one thing about Stroh, like, you can't count him out of things either. And with the lack of, like, really, really great pitching out there, and definitely a need for guys that can eat innings and guys that can start games. I mean, I'm sure that even with all this, like, people are going to be really tickled and maybe you're going to like pony up and give them some money to pitch for him.
I think it's awesome. I love the fact that he comes out into social media and he replies and he's in articles, and I just love everything around it. We know basketball players do it. In the NBA, how much fun do we have when guys get into feuds with other players, or guys are starting to talk about where they want to go, and there's borderline, I don't know if you want to call it tampering, but guys are talking about where they want to play and who they want to play with. I think it's great. I really do. I know it can rub you the wrong way, some of the things Stroman's done, but I mean, do you not find it entertaining if you're a fan of baseball.
No, but what I'm saying is he would give his left nut to pitch for the New York Yankees. I'm convinced of that. I just don't think that this is the way to go about it.
Oh, it's not. There's no way the Yankees, they're not.
Unless he doesn't care anymore. Unless he doesn't care about pitching for the Yankees and he wants to pitch for a rival and show him up six times a year, or think he can show him up six times a year.
Does he actually think that him putting out those comments was going to make a team go after him? Like, what's he thinking? If that's what he actually wants,
well, there's no way. He needs a contract.
Yeah, but imagine I wanted to play again in free agency and I went to the New York Rangers and I was like, hey, New York Rangers, your fourth line. Like, I can't even fathom doing that. Like, I think it's great being in media and being a fan of baseball. I think it's great. But for myself, if I'm like, hey, Rangers, you know what? Your fourth line, man, he is terrible at taking draws. Your penalty killing sucks. And then imagine me missing a player. Like, imagine they had like a great fourth liner. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that player. That player, actually, he's pretty good too. Like, it's crazy.
I love it too, because he was teammates with Jay Happ. Like, he was teammates in Toronto with Jay Happ.
And which name did he forget though when he was saying this though in the comments?
Tanaka. He didn't mention Tanaka. But Tanaka's
he missed a pitcher though. He missed a pitcher and said, I forgot about him. He's good too. Like, it's nuts. I'm just trying. I literally put myself through it right now. I think it's great and everything, but until I actually put myself in that spot, you wouldn't get a job. If I said something like that towards the New York Rangers playing, no, not one team would take a shot at me after that. No one would pick me up.
Here's what I wonder, Leap, and I've thought about this for a couple of years now. Stroman's a good pitcher. That's not up for debate. But is he a great pitcher? And I would argue in an era, whether I like it or not, in an era obsessed with velocity and strikeouts, Marcus is a ground ball guy. Is that fair to say?
Yes. I mean, the numbers show it. Yes.
Yeah. The numbers show it. That he developed the sinker in 2014. That's the pitcher that he became. I think he is a middle of the rotation starter on a good team. I don't think he's an ace on a good team. I do think Trevor Bauer, who I've got issues with in different ways than Stroman, and in ways that bother me more than Marcus. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Marcus being silly on social media is relatively innocent. Trevor Bauer, it's a bit of a different level of concern that I have with a guy like him and some of the character stuff.
Yep.
But Trevor Bauer will throw 98 and strike out 14 guys in nine innings. And I think is a legitimate, from a purely on-field perspective, an ace on a good ball team. I think that's the difference, right? And teams are willing to look the other way more if they're convinced that the production is going to be there. The things that bother them about you, they'll turn more of a blind eye to if they think you're going to go out and be dominant every 5 days. Marcus Stroman can go out and be good every 5 days, but I don't think he's going to be dominant every 5 days.
No, but he's also really good. And I think what you're seeing too, especially now, and regardless, it's a 60-game season, and I saw 45 pitching changes last night. Like, there's going to be a really big value on starting pitching and guys that you can go in like once every 5 days and know a guy's going to get you, you know, six or seven, like, and consistently get you there. So from a team standpoint, I think if you're really a good team, you realize how important Stroh would be. If a guy, especially if he shows up and throws 200 innings like he has in the past, I think there's going to be bigger value on that than there has been in the last few years. I think people are starting to realize that. And also, like, if you're Stroh, like, and I had this talk with one of our players who was really kind of like maybe too nice to management. Like the only guy that really won the battle here until he actually got traded to the Mets was Stroh. Like no matter what, he was the last guy in the clubhouse. He was the last guy that could leave. He kind of took control of it himself. But like, this is also his only chance to get paid. This is the only chance he's ever going to be a free agent, and he needs to cash in. So I think he's just pulling out all the cards. And I'm not so sure. I think, Bauer's going to get huge money because he is the ace. But I also think, like, for a team that's really forward thinking and realizes the importance of a guy that's just going to eat up innings for you and probably pitch better than 500, like this might be a pretty good bet for us.
All right, so I am becoming like Cosmo Kramer on this show, addicted to making bets. At least mine don't cost me a ton of money, and I'm, you know, it's not affecting my life in any negative way outside of the show. You and I, as Ziggy, jump in if you want, make a bet on Stroman's term on his next contract. Where should we set the over-under? 2.5 years?
Yes.
You know, if you're under, you think he's signing for a one- or two-year contract, and if you're over, you think he's signing 3, 4, maybe 5 if he's really lucky. I don't see a 5 out there for him, especially in COVID times. So over-under... 2.5. How many years on Marcus Stroman's contract that he signs with whoever this offseason?
I'm going over. I'm going to say he's going to get a 3-year deal. There's going to be enough teams in on him where he gets the third year with probably like a option on the fourth.
I'm going under. I think teams are going to be very cautious with him. I think he's taking it to the next level with all these chatter with New York. And I don't see a team locking him in long term.
Does the Bauer stuff and the fact whether he holds to this or not remains to be seen. But the fact that Trevor Bauer is openly talking about being a 1 or 2-year deal guy, is that going to set the market, or is Bauer an individual entity and teams will look to give term to other starting pitchers because they're looking to lock guys in who can throw 180 or 200 innings over a 162 game season?
I'm going to say Bauer is his own kind of entity, you know, and it would be interesting to see if some team doesn't call him out on this 1-year deal and like just pay him 30 million for 1 year and see what you got and pitch for your next contract. I mean, again, 30 million may be an unrealistic number, but you look at, like the 1-year deals, like Alex has signed guys to in Atlanta, which with Donaldson and then Marcell Ozuna, it's kind of worked out. But nobody's ever done this as a pitcher, and Bauer has since kind of like backtracked on the 1-year deal thing. But it's an interesting proposition to think, like, what if I do give this guy 1 year and I do give him like $25 million and then he's pitching for his next contract and then we go out there and throw him every 4 days? So that might not be for some teams that might not be a bad deal.
Yeah, I guess Bauer's view would be that he could potentially be undervaluing himself if he signs a long-term deal, like for 4 or 5 years and 125 or 150 million bucks or even more than that, I guess, you know, 200 mil. But geez, especially in COVID times, I would lock in. Just to be contrarian with you, back to the Stroman thing, Leap, I'm going to say under on 2.5 years. Marcus Stroman gets a 2-year contract. I'm siding with Ziggy on this one. And it's probably because Ziggy's never wrong when he makes bets.
He doesn't want to go against my locks. Yeah, he knows what side to go on now.
You want to hear my NFL show, Ziggy.
I don't.
Yeah. Well, I'll talk about my NFL pick too. You want to hear that? I'm sure.
Well,
it's going to be an interesting one.
I think Josh Tolley is eager to hear it as well. So we can do that very quickly in the next segment when we bring Josh on and begin to talk the World Series. I just don't want to lose another bet where I'm eating sheep kefir while I'm also taking shots wearing goaltending equipment.
We're actually getting a lot of messages from listeners that want to come on the ice and shoot against you. It's actually quite interesting.
Yeah.
I'm already starting to go through the vetting process.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah, we're gonna pick some.
How deep is this gonna be? We're gonna need some references. This is gonna be this is gonna be like a hiring thing. Right? We need to talk
references,
to your last 3 employers. We need
CV,
addresses.
Absolutely, everything.
Addresses of places you've lived for the last 20 years.
Yep.
You know, are you a Russian spy? We need to be able to vet that. Like, stuff like that. We need to know.
Don't we need some video, too, or some, like, you know, some exit velocity off the stick on the slap shot?
Yeah, we might have to. Yeah, we might do that, actually.
You got
to
be over 90.
Yeah, show us a video of your shot. I think that would be awesome. Yeah.
You are just such a problem. Is it snowing yet, Leap? Are you buried under like 2 feet of snow? Please tell
no,
me.
But we will be by probably by the end of the weekend. Hey, can I ask a question? Are you going to go with the old-time goalie pads, or are we going new wave, like big style?
I believe the style I'm going for is the Pete Peters. That's what I'm going with. The Pete Peters.
Honestly, we have somebody that sponsored the event. They sponsored, like, they donated the equipment from a manufacturer.
Oh,
like
wonderful.
A company.
Okay. Did
yeah.
Full on Dominic Hasek mask? That's what I'm after.
I'm going to design the mask. I might have something up my sleeve for that.
I don't want Ziggy designing the mask. I don't want Ziggy designing the mask. I want to wear a full-on Dominic Hasek mask. And I want this to be on a Friday, some week on a Friday. We'll get Josh Toley in, a former Blue Jays catcher, somebody who used to have to answer to Tim Leeper. We'll see if we can turn the tables next. Ziggy, it's time to bump up the IQ of this show. Leaper dragged us down. We got to bring it back. Got to bring it
with
back.
With Toley? You're going to do this with Toley?
Damn right we are. Josh, don't put up with that. You used to have to answer to this guy. Now he's got to answer to you.
Yeah, you guys finally brought some brains in today.
How are you, pal?
I'm doing wonderful. And yourself?
Yeah, we're doing well. Josh Toley, a former Blue Jays catcher, is with us. Tim Leaper is here for the full hour, former Blue Jays first base and outfield coach. It's leadoff with Ziggy and Scotty Mac. We're talking World Series. Have you seen, by the way, Josh, have you seen Tim Leaper and Dustin May in the same room?
No, but I would love to. I don't mean to get on the redheads right now, because they do take a lot of heat, but I would love to see. And then Turner right next to them.
That's right. I actually, you know what? It's Leap and Justin Turner look more the same than Leap and Dustin May, now that I think about it.
And the Leap Turner combo would be way more entertaining than the Leap Dustin May combo. Dustin May is just kind of like, he just wouldn't say anything. Like, at least Leap and Turner, boy, they'd get at each other for sure.
Here's a thought for you. Justin Turner, third baseman, Toronto Blue Jays 2021. Why not?
The only reason I'm going to say why not is I think he just loves LA so much. Like, he is, this guy spends so much of his energy, and he's one of my best friends in baseball, but he spends so much energy outside the stadium doing like charity events there. And I've never seen a fan base, even Toronto and the Bautista combination when I was there, I've never seen anything like it. These fans love this guy. He is like, he's like the king when he walks around Dodger fans.
So you came up with him in the Mets system. Is that, did you play coming up? Is that how you know him?
Yeah. Yep. I think he got traded, or we signed him on a minor league contract one year from like maybe the Reds or the Orioles. I don't recall. And then, then we came up through the big leagues together.
Well, he's put together a hell of a career and made some really nice money in LA over the last 4 years. He is a free agent this off season. It just occurred to me, because the Blue Jays, you know, they have a need at third base. Leap, we'll start with you. We haven't really gotten into the World Series. Leap, and then you pick up on this, Josh. General thoughts on the first two games of the World Series. We got the traditional starting pitching matchup in game one, and then in game two, Blake Snell did what he does, which is pitch reasonably well, but not go all that deep into the game. And the Dodgers had a bullpen day as they wait for Walker Buehler to get on the right rest and pitch in game three. Leap, what has stood out to you through the first two games?
I mean, not to be Debbie Downer here, but like the pitching changes stuff, like it's a little, gosh, it's tough to watch it, sit there and watch it sometimes. And, I think you're vulnerable every time that bullpen gate swings open. And, you know, Justin Morneau made a really great point last night. Like, you're asking these guys to be on the second they come into the game. And, you know, you are last night. And I know that Dustin May gave up the home run, but he was hot in the second inning. He was maybe going to come in the second. He doesn't get in until the, I think it was the fifth when he did get in, and then he ends up making a mistake when he gets in there. So it's just kind of been down to the bullpen. I think that whoever has the strongest bullpen going down the end here, and I think Tampa's bullpen is kind of faltering a little bit. You know, Nick Anderson's got given up runs like in his last, I think, five postseason outings. He's probably faced more. He's close to face as many hitters in the postseason he did in the whole regular season. But I think the other thing that's kind of standing out, like if you make a mistake, a glaring mistake, then those are the ones that they're getting hit. And it was an 0-2 pitch last night. It was a hanging breaking ball over the middle that after like a really nice single by Margot, where he took his hit the other way with two outs, and then a hanging breaking ball over the middle of the plate that led a 2-run double. So I just think teams are capitalizing mistakes, and those are the things that are kind of like getting brought to the forefront for me.
Josh.
Yeah, I must feel the same way. I mean, it does it by the sixth or seventh inning, it becomes painful. I saw a stat last night. It was like the first time since 1990 in a World Series that a team used like four pitchers in the first four innings or something, four different pitchers. And I this is where I tend to be old school a little bit, is you pay starting pitching to get you deep into ball games, and then you pass the baton to the back end relievers, and all the other relievers kind of fill the gap in between. And Leap's right. I mean, you're going to see, they still got five games to go. And these bullpens, you can, the taxing that the bullpen that we're seeing on the bullpens right now is a complete byproduct of what's happened from, let's call it the wild card series, all the way through the division series, championship series. These guys haven't had many off days. And relievers are a little fragile, not to be condescending or anything, but they're a little fragile when it comes to workloads, not workloads. I've played with 1,000 relievers that, you know, they give it the false hustle. Oh, I want the ball. I want the ball. I want the ball. So you give them the ball 3 days in a row and they say, oh, they're abusing me. I don't want the ball. Like, you got to give me a break, you know? And I think there's that psychological piece for these bullpen guys now. A guy like Victor Gonzalez, Dustin May, for example, have been starters their whole career. They're young. They don't know yet. So I think we could see these guys almost catch lightning in a bottle when they're on, because their stuff is that good. But I think as a whole, I just think we're seeing it right now. I think what teams are doing is it's ruining the enjoyment and the pitcher's duels, the 2-1 ball games, the 5-2 ball games. Like that's why we turn the TV on, is to watch Gerrit Cole match up with a Glasnow or a Blake Snell, let's call it, and go deep into the ball games. But we don't see it anymore. And I think for me, I was texting Leap last night in our group chat that we that Snell didn't even get an opportunity for the win.
Right.
He got. Yeah. He didn't even get a shot to win his own ball game. That just doesn't make sense to me, guys.
Tim Leeper and Josh Tolley with us. This is a baseball roundtable on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yeah, Blake Snell, 8 strikeouts, no hits allowed through 4 innings of a World Series. And there was a lot of comparisons last night being made to Sandy Koufax. And he did the same thing in 63 in game one, but he was allowed to finish the game. And I say allowed because there's been a lot of talk around the manager Cash and how he uses pitchers, how long he keeps them in. Do you guys think he should have been left in that game last night in that spot? Leap, I don't, you start with you.
I'll say, like, for me, and when he came out, like, I thought it kind of, and again, I may have been a little bit hard on him. Like Snell's a guy that won the Cy Young with less than six innings to start. But it was a dominant, like, five and two-thirds innings. But, like, it was good. So last night, I thought, and in my group chat, like, when he came off for the fourth inning, and he was going off the mound, like, that was, like, the greatest thing ever. But, like, it's only the fourth inning. Like, for me, that kind of, and I may be hard here, but I thought it was like, oh man, I got one more inning. I'm going to get through this. I'm going to get the win. Cause at the time they were up, what, 4-0, 5-0 or something. So I thought with two outs, and even though he was pitching to Kiki Hernandez and he had a couple pitches that were probably strikes that weren't called strikes, his emotions and the way he wanted those pitches and how bad he wanted those pitches in the fifth inning kind of led to the fact that, like, he kind of fell apart. He threw a lousy 3-1 non-competitive pitch for a walk. And then the emotion, I think, led to that kind of hanging breaking ball that went for a home run, and then another walk, and then he's out of the game. So, like, I don't. That's a lot. Like, I think, should he have been allowed to go in? Not the way he was pitching at that point, because he kind of lost his mojo going into that. He had that great slider going before that, and that was nowhere to be found. And I thought that he was chasing the win at that point.
Josh, with a Brandon Lau who, you know, let's be honest, the patience Kevin Cash has shown, and I would imagine, I should probably say that the front office has shown, because they're the ones as involved in drawing up the batting order each and every night as the manager is in this day and age. Brandon Lau has continued to hit number two. Now, he was one of the best hitters for the Rays and a huge force in the American League through the regular season. Did not much against the Blue Jays in the two-game series and struggled badly in the five-game series against the Yankees and then the seven-game series against the Astros. Continued to hit in the two spot throughout. Wasn't pushed down in the order, and it finally pays off last night. As a player, given what Lau means to that team, would you as a teammate have understood that he needed to be kept in the two hole, or would you have started asking questions or muttering to the teammate in the locker stall next to you, Brandon Lau hasn't hit in 3 weeks. What's he doing still hitting two?
It's a confidence thing. Baseball players, we get like psychologically, like if we feel like the manager's not on us, like he was early in the season, our brains start going. So what Tampa just did is exactly the byproduct of what happened last night. They kept the confidence in him, kept him in the two hole the entire time. Not one of his teammates asked any questions, not even to one another. I could probably assure you of that almost 100%. But when you show that you roll the same guy out, especially when he's struggling or not struggling, and he's hitting in the two hole, you keep him there, you let him work through his funks, and he did, and it paid off. Two homers last night. And I think that's the piece that I think Kevin Cash probably has a little bit of a say on, is maybe that argument against the front office saying, give me all the numbers you want, but if I move this kid down to the seven hole or I hit him eighth, there's going to be a big psychological reaction to that for him personally. And then you don't, at that point, then you lose him. And when you start losing players in the clubhouse, that's where you lose players. You don't lose the players really on the field. You lose players in the clubhouse. Because he comes in and says, man, I've been our number two hitter all year. Now I'm hitting seventh or eighth. Man, this I don't want to be here. This is, you know, they start getting that kind of mentality. So, yes, Tampa did the right thing, and kind of hats off to them for doing that. Because a lot of teams in today's industry won't do that.
There's a big difference between the payrolls of both these teams, and that just seems to come up no matter who you're talking about or who you're talking with about the World Series. Do the players and coaches, is that something you talk about or think about when you're on a team, or is that just all of us in the media?
I'll start. I've never ever thought about it. I've never looked at players like money. I always hate when they say, well, this player makes this or this team making more money. I think it's just a competitor in me. Like, as a coach, like, we're on the field with you today. Like, we're going to play better and we're going to beat you. So it's, for me, like, it doesn't come up. But, well, obviously with the money, you got a lot of talent on your team on the other side. But, like, I always feel like you can beat the other team no matter what their payroll or who is on the other team.
Josh.
Yeah, I could echo to that. I mean, I have never really even looked into it until I started coming on, doing some of these radio shows. And again, you're right. Like, a lot of the buzz is about the payroll, but it never even dawned on me that was a real concept in people's minds and in the fans' minds. But it clearly is. And I feel the same way as Leap. I mean, when you're between the lines, it doesn't matter. I've never been starstruck. I think a lot of baseball players will say the same thing. Even when I first got to the big leagues, there's nothing like that. I mean, when you're competing between the lines, it is what it is. It's not who's making what.
Josh, if you ask nicely, Ziggy might let you into the group chat. They've got baseball takes in his group chat.
We called the Jays. We called the Jays starting pitchers in games one.
You
and
did,
two.
Ike. You and Ben Ackerman, you did it.
The Ackman.
Hey, Ziggy, I got three things for you real quick. If I can somehow get across the border, I want to be part of the slap shot with Scotty Mackengal.
Can you skate?
Okay.
Can you skate?
Yeah, I could probably skate a little bit better than Leap.
Okay.
Perfect. That's all we need.
I'm 80 years old.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. You got a few years on me.
All right. So number one, you want in on the slap shot competition. Numbers two and three, what do you got?
I want to get in on some of your other bets. So always keep me in mind when you're doing bets. And I'm going to follow you. I'm going to take the under on Stroman.
Okay.
All right.
And then
Giants and Eagles tonight.
Oh, I got to take the Eagles.
No, just
four and a half Eagles.
All right. Well, just make the sound of a toilet flushing as opposed to actually where. And what's the third thing you want? There you go. There's a toilet flush. And what's the third thing, Josh? Well, we're going through the list.
You know what? I just blacked out. I forgot what the third thing was. But I had three bets on top of my head, and then the toilet flushing just flushed it right out.
All right. Well, that's we got.
He's got the under. He's got the under on
Stroman's contract,
2.5 years, yeah, and 4.5 Eagles. I got Eagles 4.5 as well.
Is that a so Ziggy that's lock?
I like it. I'm not going to give this one a Ziggy lock. That's what I would go with tonight.
Josh, it's good to hear your voice. We'll talk to you next week. We might even bring you back with Leap. How does that sound?
I love this. Anytime. I tell you this, guys, real quick. My life is complete. This is all I wanted to do was host a radio show with Leap.
There you go.
Doesn't get better than that.
Great talking, guys.
It's just a half step better than complete unemployment.
Yeah, we're there too.
Josh Tolley, we'll get him back on next week. Leap hangs in. What you watching with Hugh next? All right, Hugh, what you watching, or what are we watching?
Works a lot better when I plug the old headphones in. I mean, I could hear you, but your dulcet tones sound so much better when through the cans here. Yeah, hold your nose and watch this one. Thursday Night Football, the 1-4-1 Philadelphia Eagles and the 1-5 New York Giants in a battle in the NFC least. Again, if the Giants win, they don't take over top spot because they've already lost to the Cowboys, who currently have that position. But if the Eagles win, they take over top spot with they'll have a sparkling 2-4-1 record if they win tonight. This is bad. And we were talking earlier, a team that's 6-10, as laughable as that sounds, might win this division, which is just an awful look for the NFL.
No, since the realignment into four divisions in each conference, no team with fewer than 7 wins has won a division. There have been some 7-9 division winners, but never a 6-10.
Yeah.
That would not look good. And they would host a wild card weekend playoff
game. Wow. That's incredible.
Leap, before we let you go and invite you back next Thursday, you wanted to give a shout out to a pretty good person in our lives.
Yeah, John Lott, just a athletes and media don't always get along, but you know, John's there every day. His passion for the job, his professionalism, his sincerity, and his love of baseball, his love of Canadian baseball, love of country, and in the last few years, his photography has gotten tremendous as well. But Congratulations on his retirement, but he's a guy that will sorely be missed because he's a true pro, and going to work every day and being around him, you realize how good he was. And I hope he enjoys retirement because he was great at what he did. And I really enjoyed seeing him every day that I was over there in the Blue Jays.
A true old school reporter too, like would dig for the story, a terrific feature writer, just good all around. And as great a reporter, as great a journalist as he has been, he is an even better person. So we congratulate John Lott on his retirement. Leap, you're back next week, allegedly.
Made it.
Allegedly. Allegedly. We look forward to it. Be listening to the show, because then you can get the Ziggy Locks and win some money in Week 7 of the NFL on Sunday, all right?
And Ziggy, I'm on to you. I am on to you.
And Leap, you do have a formal invite to shoot pucks at me. Because I know that. I know you.
Get those skates on. Dust them off. Get them ready.
Justin Bourne and David Amber for Hockey Central at 8:30. Up next, Clark Judge of Sports Illustrated and the Talk of Fame Network. NFL Week 7 starts with a Thursday night clunker, although it matters in the NFC East. We'll get into the Cowboys, the Tua situation, and the Fitzpatrick situation in Miami, and so much more. Clark Judge next. Ziggy, the text line is just on fire with applicants.
Yeah, I can see on Twitter, too. It's awesome. They want to shoot on you, bud. Can I say it? Don't blame them.
I don't know if they want to shoot on me as much as they want to spend time with you.
Trust me, they want to go and shoot on you.
They want to shoot pucks at me, huh?
Yeah. I think I'm helping the cause by saying we're going high heat only. If that's not part of your resume, I only shoot high heat. There's a good chance you're not coming on the ice.
You're looking for slappers off the face mask or that collarbone area that isn't
anything
quite 100% protected.
Anything that takes you down pretty much is okay with me.
Do you think we should take this one step further and see if we can't get this done in Louisville, Kentucky, and rent an hour of ice at the KFC Yum Center? Future home of the Raptors, apparently.
As long as they have the spicy plant-based chicken, I'm in. One spicy plant-based chicken, I'll come down.
The arena is not the restaurant, Ziggy.
I know, but if we're going to go to Kentucky, you better get me a spicy chicken. That's all I'm saying.
A spicy chicken. All right. A fake chicken. Did you see the breaking news out of Ottawa? All of us. Yes. Say that again. Ottawa. Yeah. The breaking news with the Senators of Ottawa. Connor Brown, the former Leaf, a 3-year deal at $3.6 million per. So they avoid arbitration. There was an arbitration hearing scheduled for later this morning. My only conclusion on this Senator situation, Ziggy, and we saw, you know, Dadonoff is a decent player, the ex-Panther who signed for three times, I think 15, what is it, 5 a year with the Senators. Ottawa becomes a somewhat appealing place to play, or a more appealing place to play right now, coming out of COVID-19, because they've got to spend money to get to the cap floor. So if you're a guy who is going to make $2.5 or $3 million a year, you might be able to sneak a $4, $4.5, or $5 million AAV out of a team like the Senators, because they just got to spend some money right now.
The thing about that is that you can do it two ways. You're either going to overpay for players that you like because you have to spend the money, or you can eat contracts from other teams and get draft picks. There's one of two ways to do it. And we've seen both. Connor Brown's been a great fit in Ottawa. I don't care. You know, I miss him on the Leafs.
I liked him a lot, especially in his rookie year when he scored 20 goals. But they ended up with so much depth, Ziggy, that he was effectively shunted to the fourth line here.
Yeah.
It was a penalty killer, you know, didn't get a ton of five-on-five time, and I think that that's what hurt him. This is a guy who played with Connor McDavid in junior.
He can play. He's a player. He's got the Zach Hyman, I'm going to get the puck for you, you know, hard-nosed game, low-maintenance player, but he had a little bit offensive upside. I mean, Zach Hyman had a great year last year, right up there for player of the year on the team. If you want to talk about who to add to that list, whether it's a Matthews, Anderson, and Nett, I mean, you can throw Zach Hyman in there, but Connor Brown's got this offensive upside that I really miss on the team. But yeah, the depth issue and how much ice time he was going to get. He's a good fit for Ottawa. Plays well, plays hard. You know what you're getting. He's consistent. So he's getting paid.
How's this, Ziggy, for a hindsight take? All right. So, you know, you can call me out for my hindsight and I'll fully cop to it. Connor Brown was negatively affected by the signing of Patrick Marleau because guys ended up getting pushed down, right? Zach Hyman ended up finding a home for a while there on the left side of Austin Matthews' line. But with the emergence of the Janssens of the world and the Kapanens of the world, Connor Brown is your prototypical third liner. You talk a lot about it's not top six anymore, it's top nine. Other guys, and I know Marleau and Brown play the opposite wings, but in terms of filling roster spots, Connor Brown could have been a second, third line hybrid sort of guy for the Maple Leafs, but the more depth that they acquired, it pushed him down in the lineup and he became a penalty killer slash bit part, and he was never able to establish a role similar to Zach Hyman's with this Maple Leafs team.
Yeah, I like that take. That's fine. I mean, whenever you're... The Marleau contract, I liked bringing him in. I love him as a player. I didn't see the fit for the Leafs when they brought Marleau in. And I understand they want a veteran presence in the room. I think, well, it cost them a first rounder to get rid of that contract. Obviously, you're not going to like the end of that deal. But I also think that was a time to go for it. I think the Leafs should have went for it in the Matthews, Nylander, Marner entry-level deals. I'm never going to back down from that take.
Especially after they made the playoffs in a somewhat surprising fashion in the rookie years of those three players.
But the thing is, if you're building a team and you're a general manager, it's hard to see as that. You're like, I'm going to build something here that's sustainable. But what's sustainable in a cap system? It's very hard to build a consistently winning team. You have to decide when to go for it. And I mean, I just think it was a couple years ago, but Connor Brown, good for him.
Good for him. Paid 3.6 per year over a 3-year contract with the Ottawa Senators, avoiding arbitration. Oh, man, we got a Thursday nighter tonight. Now, I would sit here and say, well, the 1-5 Giants at the 1-4-1 Philadelphia Eagles, complete snooze fest, who cares? Except it matters in the NFC East, especially when you consider that the Cowboys, a 2-win team right now, lead the division, are without their starting quarterback Dak Prescott for the rest of the year, and there appears to be, at least in the case of a couple of anonymous players, a mutiny underway in Big D. To break that all down and to look ahead to the action of Week 7 in the NFL, we welcome from SI and the Talk of Fame Network, Clark Judge, to the program. Clark, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm fine.
It's great to hear your voice. Great to have you on. If you were to prognosticate the winner of the NFC East right now, which team would you pick, and what do you think their season-ending record will be?
Well, the team that should win it is Dallas, just because they have more talent than anyone else. But unfortunately, as you just mentioned, they subtracted their record-breaking quarterback. He was on a record-breaking pace, but I look at what's going on there and think that, you know what, I think we're going back to what has always been, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, they've got a zillion injuries, yet they're in every game. Now, They just happen to lose most of them, but they're in every game. And that's because Carson Wentz, for all the mistakes he's making, is tough, courageous, fighting to the end, and he gets them there. And it's close, but it doesn't seem to always work out. When they get some of these players back, especially in the offensive line, I just have to believe that they will win. Now, what's the record going to be? I mean, they've got a tie, so you'd have to figure in a tie, but I could see 7-8-1. I do think a losing record's probably going to win that division. Otherwise, I'd say 7-9. That's happened before. Remember when Seattle did it, and I think it was 2010, and everyone was up in arms, like, this is ridiculous. And the first playoff game, they beat the defending NFC champion Seattle, New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, that was so, beast mode, too, Marshawn Lynch
that
game.
That was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when they had the earthquake reaction. Remember the seismic tremors there where they're saying they measured it, and he went through the entire defense. But, yeah, I'd say Philadelphia only because it just seems they always overcome adversity. I don't trust the Giants. My father-in-law is a diehard Giants fan, and he's given up on them. And I look at them and go, I don't see why you should stay with them. I look at the quarterback, I just don't know is going to make it. I thought last year they really got something here in Daniel Jones, and he seems to have gone backwards some. And, of course, that can happen with changing offensive coordinators and changing coaching staffs. But they just seem like the same old Giants. And the Washington football team has just got a raft of problems, beginning with the quarterback. Who they have a quarterback? Well, you take your pick. I mean, each week it's somebody different. So, to me, it's Philadelphia in the end. As I said, I think that the Cowboys should be the team, but I think Philadelphia will be the team.
Yeah, I'm with you on Philadelphia. These next 3 weeks, our next three games are huge, right? They got the Giants, the Cowboys, and the Giants again. I know you mentioned the injuries. So they get back Lane Johnson at right tackle, and they get back Jackson as their wide receiver. How much of an impact do you think those players will give the Eagles?
Well, Lane Johnson's impact will be huge because Wentz is getting killed back there. I mean, he's running for his life. That will help. DeSean Jackson gives him a deep threat. They found some people with the loss of wide receivers that they otherwise wouldn't have discovered. But DeSean Jackson gives him a deep threat. But the thing about DeSean Jackson is he's always hurt, guys. I mean, I don't know if you play fantasy football, but my friends who do always tell me, DeSean Jackson, you can't count him because he's hurt every year, and that is the case. So he'll be back, and, yeah, he'll make some big catches, but inevitably, to me, he'll get hurt again. The key to me is Lane Johnson. You've got to get somebody in that front offensive line who's experienced, that Wentz has played with before, and who can plug the holes. That's a good start.
We're joined by Clark Judge on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So, Dallas, anonymous leaks are never a good sign for where things are going. I mean, we love them in the media, right? Because it gives us a bunch to chew on. I think that if the Dallas Cowboys are a going concern, Clark, one way or the other, it is huge because you either love the Cowboys or you hate them. I don't know anybody for which there is a gray area when it comes to the Dallas Cowboys. So even the circus act plays. Was it a mistake to hire Mike McCarthy? Where are you at with McCarthy, this coaching staff, Mike Nolan, the defensive coordinator? Has Jerry Jones stepped in it again?
Well, it certainly looks that way, but it's early. I mean, I covered a team that was 0-4 one year. They ended up going to the playoffs, and a guy had written the death notice for the coach in his first year. He just said, this guy's in over his head. Turns out, I think he became coach of the year, but anyway. That can happen. With Mike McCarthy, I wasn't on board with it from the start, and I'm not trying to give you a 2020 perspective after the fact. Just because he was a recycled coach, there were problems in Green Bay at the end, it seemed like, with him and Aaron Rodgers, and I thought the Packers should have been better than they were. They were good when he was there. They won a Super Bowl when he was there, but I thought, geez, if you had Aaron Rodgers and some of those people they had the second year after the Super Bowl, I mean, the year immediately following, they were 15-1. And you went, boy, this could be a run. And then they lost to the Giants in the playoffs in the first game, and they really didn't do much afterwards. I mean, they would get in the playoffs but not go deep. So I wasn't a big fan of the hire. I didn't know how he would mesh with some of those personalities. A lot of personalities in that locker room. And there are a lot of there's a lot of sort of competing interests. You know, Zeke wanted a contract. Dak wants a contract. Amari Cooper wanted a contract. All this going on with Jerry Jones, who's the ringleader of the circus, at the top. And so we go into the season with Dak getting a long-term deal. What's going on? And then he gets hurt. And I think a veteran coach like Mike McCarthy may not be the right guy, only because he brought in some guys, like you mentioned, Mike Nolan, who at one time was regarded as a really good defensive coach, just may not be with these young players. They've got a bevy of young, talented players that mesh as well. Whatever's going on is not going on right, and that's not a mystery. People turn on the TV can figure that out, especially defensively. They're behind immediately. But I'd be wary, A, of doing it, of saying this too soon, because I've seen teams turn around, B, because they play in the NFC East where anything's possible, and C, because they've got a raft of talent. But the anonymous quotes, like you mentioned, it's a media delight, because I covered a team that didn't win during a year, and you're always looking for those things. But to me, as I've gotten older, it's a sort of a cheap way out. Listen, if you want to criticize the coach, put your name to it, all right? Otherwise, the anonymous quotes, it's so easy to have a guy say something, you know, off the record and just have it appear in the paper. I don't know where they're coming from, but it happens when you've got winless teams, or you've got teams that are like the Cowboys with one game. That happens. Or two games, I guess they've won. But the fact of the matter is, who's leading the division? It's the Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
I mean, so so they could end up winning that thing. And you know, lo and behold, when you win, it takes care of everything. It's the oldest cliche in the world. Winning cures everything. And as I said, I've been there. I covered 0-14 when we got those anonymous quotes. At the end of the season, we're all saying, God, this coach is great. He's the perfect thing for us. Tom Coughlin, same thing in New York. Remember when he was going to get fired? 2006, and Tiki Barber saved his job the last game of the year against Washington, and they get in the playoffs at 8-8. The next year, the guys, the New York Raiders who wanted him fired were promoting him from the Hall of Fame because he beat the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. So it can turn around quickly. But anyway, that's a long way of just saying, A, I wasn't on board with it. B, I just think you've got to let this thing pay out. And C, I'm not surprised by anonymous quotes at any point.
How awkward is it, do you think, in that room? Or do you think these players actually went up and discussed their issues with the coaching staff? Or like, I can't imagine that coming out and then having to go onto the field or in practice or into a game with knowing players are going behind my back, going to the media. How do you think that's all working out right now?
Well, Mike McCarthy's not a rookie coach. I mean, he's been around for a long time. He's seen it. I mean, that's part of the game. He's seen that happen. If you're with a team that's losing, eventually you're going to see this play itself out. There'll be people who won't attach their names to quotes that are either hurtful or incendiary because they're unhappy. No one likes to lose. They don't like to get embarrassed like they are in Dallas. But I said the bottom line is there's still leading that division, and they could end up winning it. So Mike McCarthy's seen this before, and do I know whether people have gone to talk to him? I assume they might have, but I just don't know. I'm not in that locker room. I'm not around that team. But I will tell you this. I know from experience players who have said that to me have not gone to the coach. That's why they make those quotes anonymous. They don't want their name attached, and so they haven't been to talk to the guy. But at this juncture, it's probably incumbent upon Mike McCarthy and his staff to sit down with these guys and say, okay, listen, who's got a problem here? Because come forward, there are not going to be repercussions. Let's air it out. Let's get this thing done sooner rather than later, because, guys, take a look at the standings. We're on top, all right? Nothing not to like about that. Yeah, we're not the team we want to be. But in the end, if we get to the playoffs, it's a whole new season. So let's just air it out now and figure out what we have going forward, because we're not going to have Dak Prescott. It's not going to be like it was. So we've got to make some changes here. Things aren't going right now. It doesn't mean they can't turn around. But I think that's what he would have to do, and I think probably will do.
With Clark Judge. Well, we've got you for a couple more minutes, Clark. I wish we could flesh this out more, but time is against us. Tua takes the snaps starting week 8 after Miami's bye. The LA Rams will come in on November the 1st, and the Tua Tagovailoa era will begin in Miami. The Dolphins are 3-3. They are very much in the AFC playoff picture, and they are very much in the AFC East division picture as well. Extra wild card this year. The Bills are 4-2. The Patriots aren't what they used to be. they make the switch, even though they're incumbent and the aging one, Ryan Fitzpatrick, is playing well. This tells me that they probably drew up a plan at the start of the season. Tua is our guy after the bye week. I actually like this for Miami. Regardless of what their playoff prospects for this year may be, they're sticking to the plan because they've got the bigger picture in mind. They've got Tua as their guy long term, and they got a bunch of draft picks, their own in Houston's, in next April's draft. This Dolphins team, if Tua is in fact the guy, could be very good sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think they probably drew up this schedule. I think they absolutely drew up this schedule. And I'm not saying specifically about the bye, but they weren't going to put him in until they were absolutely sure, A, he was healthy, and B, he was ready. And I'm with you on this in that I think it's a good idea. I'm not sure it's a good idea to bring him back against the Rams, but I think it's a good idea to get him in at this juncture. I know just from experience and having covered this league for almost 40 years, when you draft somebody in the top 10, especially a quarterback, he's going to play and he's going to start. Now the question is when he's going to start. Now, keep in mind, remember when Eli Manning was drafted and he was the number one pick of the draft, but ended up getting traded to the Giants. They brought him in the 10th game of the season. The Giants were 5-4, very much in the middle of things. Kurt Warner was the starter. Sat down Kurt Warner, and they played Eli because that's what you do. You get the guy experience. He's got to get to play in that first year. Brian Flores is a very good coach. The Dolphins could be a pretty good team. This is a perfect time to find out, with the exception, as I said, the Rams. You know, I'm not sure I'd play him against that defense. Maybe I'd play him against the Jets. But the fact of the matter is, he's going to get a chance now to find out who he is. He's not sitting down unless he gets hurt again. He's the starter from here on in. It doesn't make any difference how bad he is, how good he is. Eli in that first year was so bad against Baltimore, he had a Blutarski rating, 0.00. They kept playing him, and you saw what happened. So it'll happen with Tua. He'll play. He'll have some ups and downs, but he'll play, and he won't come out unless he's hurt. I give Ryan Fitzpatrick all the credit in the world. He's a perfect mentor, perfect guy to guide this team. And if anything were to happen, you can start him, and you can win with him. But, yeah, it's the right move. The Dolphins will be a factor going forward if this guy is who they think he is and if he stays healthy.
Great insight, Clark. We really appreciate you joining us this morning, and we'll reach out again sometime soon.
Yeah, I look forward to it, guys. Thanks very much.
Clark Judge of SI and the Talk of Fame Network. He has a vote for the Hall of Fame, and he is the co-host of the I Test for Two podcast, which you can get on fullpressradio.com. Connor Brown locks in with the Ottawa Senators at a pretty nice number on a pretty good term. Justin Bourne with thoughts on the Chicago Blackhawks rebuild and their very public letter sent out to their fans. How will the Taves and Canes and Keese of the world take that letter? And David Amber will join Justin Bourne for our Hockey Central at 8:30 on a Thursday roundtable next. I'm not entirely sure how much more of the celebrating Ziggy's 90-mile-an-hour fastball success I can take. But there are some more guests who want to throw some love your way, Ziggy. It was 1 week ago today that you not only made contact with a 90-mile-an-hour fastball, you made contact with a 101-mile-an-hour fastball. And the fourth of five videos has gone up on the Fan590's Twitter account at Fan590. We'll retweet that and get into it in just a little bit. And as a result, I have to strap on the goalie gear and take some shots from you. And I think we've gotten Tim Leeper into this. I think we've gotten a listener into this. Justin Bourne and David Amber are here for Hockey Central at 8:30 on the Thursday. Do either of you want to strap on the skates, put a stick in your hand, and fire pucks at my forehead?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. All
right. Excellent. Yeah. Done. Wonderful.
Done.
Awesome. We'll just recruit everybody.
When is this happening?
That was easy.
Well, isn't that nice? David, I at least saw it with you, David. I thought you and I had a rapport. I thought we were pals. You know, I thought I could trust you.
I have a lot of anger to vent out right now. It's kind of like the perfect target. This would be great. Sign me up. And Ziggy, congratulations. That's amazing. Like, honestly, and
thanks,
I said off the top. I had my doubts for sure, but I did say off the top, as a civilian, we can never underestimate a professional athlete. And you're a professional athlete, and you proved once again you've got those incredible elite skills. So that's amazing.
I got to say, no, my eyes were closed
because I haven't seen
101.
Ziggy, I haven't seen the video, but like, so you guys are taking pitches from a pitching machine, I assume.
Yeah. And they had some movement
so
on
like
them.
You, oh, they did?
Yeah.
Because like in my mind, it's like if you just get a barrel in the lane, if you start your swing early enough, you get enough hacks at that, at some point you're going to get a piece. I haven't seen it, but I assume you just had an incredible hand-eye.
It comes in a little quicker than you'd think. The 90, you can kind of have an idea. The 101 was completely eyes closed. Just try to get your bat there at the same time the ball is coming over the plate.
Justin, I feel by your description that you're diminishing the fact that I got around on 92 with the strategy that you just laid out, which was put the bat in a particular lane and hope for the best. Hope that it runs into the pitching machine's pitch, which is exactly what happened.
The biggest thing for me, Scotty, would be getting close enough to the plate to actually, like, stand in there. I think I'd be terrified. That's real heat, man. Wow.
It is. It is. All right, so you're both invited. You know, as long as we respect COVID distancing and all that, there's, like, a lineup of 84 people now who want to get a slap shot at my melon. Everybody's welcome. The entire city can join in if it wants to. Let's start, guys, with the breaking news from this morning, and that is that Connor Brown, the ex-Leaf, is locked in with the Senators for 3 years at $3.6 million. Really nice fit in Ottawa, had a really nice start to his career in Toronto. I think got a little bit lost in the shuffle as he became predominantly a fourth liner, a guy with a little bit of offensive upside. Not a ton relative to his peers, but some offensive upside. So it's nice to see him get paid. Justin and then David, like I look at this and I go, Ottawa's not a bad place to play right now because they got to spend some cash to get to the cap floor. So you can score a deal. Dadonoff did. Connor Brown, he's got to be happy with what he's taken home for the next 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, nice number. You know, a nice situation for him. And actually a nice situation where he's still going to be young enough in 3 years that if he has success on this deal, which I expect him to, he could be in a position to sign another deal, potentially when the salary cap starts going back up. And I think this is a great situation for Connor Brown, who, by the way, very good hockey player and someone who really works at his craft. And I just feel like the opportunity there for him in Ottawa is, you know, kind of allow him to be the best NHL player he can be. So, you know, DJ Smith loves him. He's a guy that just does everything right all the time, never shows up on video in a negative way. So this is a great deal for both team and player in my eyes.
And I'll even go as far as to say, Scotty, I think you're diminishing his offensive ability. I mean, he was a prolific scorer back in Erie, you know, 120-plus points in one season, I believe. You know, he put up great numbers. In one season in Toronto, particularly, we scored more than 20 goals when they didn't have him in a more offensively minded role. And he'll be a 20-goal scorer in Ottawa. So they need that. They need those guys, those complementary pieces. They don't have their full foundation in place yet. They have a lot of, obviously, great prospects going to be coming up through the ranks. I think they're rated the number one group of prospects right now that are, you know, going to be NHL bound. But Connor Brown's a great piece. And as Justin says, I mean, there's a guy who just doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He works hard. He doesn't complain. He's probably what Brian Burke would call a low-maintenance player, which is what one thing you really look for when you're in the management side of things. So I think it's a great signing. And there are, you know, if they can just decide to spend some money, Ottawa could be a very great destination in the next 3-4 years because they have so much young talent there.
I've had a couple messages already come in saying, wow, over three for Connor Brown. And you know what? I tried to look at some comparables and other guys with similar point totals. He had 43 points last year in 71 games. And you get Brendan Gallagher, you get Adam Henrique, you get Josh Bailey, you get David Krejci. you know, these are some pretty good players, and these guys are all making $5.5-7 million a year. Where are you guys with that number?
That's so for me, Ziggy, like, I think it's so hard to put up points on a bad team. So, like, I just think that a point total like Connor Brown put up in Ottawa on a team that was so bad is, like, not representative of his, like, true value, what he can do on a with good line mates on a team that's clicking along. And now I don't expect Ottawa to be clicking along, but I'm just saying he's better than just his raw point total because he hasn't played on a good team there in Ottawa. But, yeah, the number 3-6, I think it's totally fair. Not only as David mentioned, is he a guy that can get you 20 goals, and I expect him to get over 20 goals for each year of that contract, but they also put him out there on the power play. You can play him up and down your lineup. He's so versatile. In no way do I think that's an overpay.
It's a good deal. Bottom line is it's a good deal, and as Justin said, Connor Brown will be able to walk up to free agency as well. So it works out on both sides. I think it's smart. Pierre Dorion, I think, had a very good offseason on all accounts.
Justin Bourne, David Amber with us. It's Hockey Central at 8:30 on a Thursday morning. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So the Chicago Blackhawks go the New York Rangers of three or so years ago, their route, and issue a letter to their fan base saying, hey, we're rebuilding. Now, pardon me for being ignorant. I thought the Blackhawks were rebuilding. I didn't feel like I needed to be told that.
Yeah.
am I like, I know Taves and Kane and Keith and Seabrook are still on that team, and they move Saad and Corey Crawford is gone, but they were already overhauling the roster in the places that they could. Am I missing something here? Like, because there's been a lot of talk, well, how's Taves and how's Kane going to react to a letter like this? To me, it's been obvious for a year or two.
Yeah, I think so much of pro sports now is managing the expectations of your fans. And you know, you see going into like an NCAA tournament like March Madness, you see the coaches say, just heap praise on the other team because they want to be the underdog. There's nothing better than having like low expectations. You know, everything you do good starts to feel really good, and then it kind of gets the ball rolling. So I feel like for the Blackhawks, it's a matter of setting the expectations a little lower for the fans. I wonder if they thought that like, hey, we just beat the Oilers in a play-in round. I hope our fans don't think we're going to be good, because that's not happening. So it just feels like managing fan expectations. And then with the players, maybe there is some value in saying to them too, you know, yeah, we may not be going out at the deadline to pick up players to make a push every single year, and this isn't going to be the year. You know, those guys are making a ton of money, and if they have to ride out a bad season or two while the team sells the deadline set of buys, probably good to set their expectations a little more accurately too.
Okay, so let me jump in, David, and then Ziggy, Justin, if you've got a comment on it, come in at the end. Does this potentially set up a Patrick Kane trade? And I'm going with him before I go with Taves or Keith, because I think at this point, Patrick Kane on the ice is the best of those players. He's still an elite player. Are they setting the groundwork for the possibility that that happens at some point sooner rather than later?
That would be a PR nightmare, I believe, for them. I think Taves and Kane, you know, I think they should be doing the Yzerman route, where you stay with one team your whole career and you're synonymous with that team. I think part of why they put out that statement is Stan Bowman was feeling a little bit of heat, clearly, in that marketplace. The expectations are high. And as Ziggy said, I think it was a PR move, sort of saying, hey, yes, we've lost a few pieces, or we got rid of a few pieces from our Stanley Cup winning time, and we are turning over a bit of a new leaf. And I think that was basically trying to buy some time. And as you say, Ziggy, as you said, Justin, managing the expectations. Patrick Kane, to me, I mean, you know, when you talk to GMs, they say you got to listen to any offers. If a team that feels they're one piece away, and Patrick Kane is a significant piece away from winning a championship, calls you up and they're going to offer you the world, yes, of course, you're going to listen and consider it. Do I think Stan Bowman's out there actively dangling Patrick Kane as a, you know, trade possibility? That would surprise me. I think that guy still has a lot left in the tank, and he what he represents to that, you know, city and that hockey market. Remember, he scored the Stanley Cup championship goal in 2010. I think that would be a really hard PR situation for the Hawks to overcome. I don't see that happening, barring something really crazy put on his plate.
Yeah, you got to remember what Tay said, right? The expectation for the other leaders on the team and myself is to come ready for training camp every year and be a playoff team. We prepare ourselves to win a cup for our fans. I've never been told that we were going through a rebuild. That has never been communicated to me, for that matter. A lot of this comes as a shock. I mean, this is all coming up. The letters coming out, it's all because of their captain. I really don't see this any other way. This isn't about, okay, we're going to be bad, let's manage what we have. I don't think this is a New York Rangers situation. I really think this is, okay, we have our leaders coming out publicly. This is starting to look really bad. We should release some kind of statement. Just the way I see it. I don't know.
You mean to manage, to counteract Taves's comments?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a strange situation there. And they're both making 10.5 a year, Kane and Taves. So those are tough contracts to trade, especially Taves. I just wonder that if the right deal comes along, if Patrick Kane doesn't end up getting moved to a team that could not only just under the cap, but from a salary budget point of view, take on the salary. Thoughts on Ilya Mikheyev apparently settling under a number that had been verbally agreed to help the Maple Leafs stay under the cap? I mean, we know that salary arbitration numbers are teams come in low, players come in high. But, you know, the agent is saying, hey, look, he came in even lower than we had verbally agreed to help the Maple Leafs because he wants to win a Stanley Cup. Here, you talk about another PR game being played here.
Yeah, I think that needs to be touched on, because I'm reading a lot of stuff about Ilya Mikheyev taking less for the good of the team and this noble knight doing the Leafs a favor. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know if an agent telling us that his player took less money. From what I'm hearing, this may have been, you know, an agent trying to save face a little bit with that contract. They weren't able to get what they thought they were. There was some misunderstanding with how the arbitration process worked, I think. The short of the long is that this is a great deal for the Leafs. Mikheyev has a chance to greatly overachieve this deal. I don't think we should focus too much on, you know, how much less this player took for the good of the team. How much less could he have taken? Like, you don't call a guy back and change the number that drastically. Are we talking 10 grand here? Like, was he going to get 3.3 instead of 3.29? What are we really talking about here?
So, well, and
that's on, a questionable one.
Yeah, and the AAV, David, if he can be the Kapanen or the Janssen of this team and fluctuate between the second and third lines wherever he ends up, and if he's a 20 to 25 goal scorer for you, or even better than that, at that number, it's huge. And it with the two-year term, it gives the Leafs a bit of certainty in an uncertain time.
It's an incredible signing for the Leafs. The potential's there. Remember, this guy was lighting it up, before he had that horrific injury. And then when they came back and went to training camp, all the eyes were on him. He was voted the MVP of the training camp, or whatever that's worth. I think the flexibility, he could play up and down the lineup. He's shown he can mesh well in the top six. He plays with a little bit of edge as well. He's got some skill, clearly, at a very reasonable number. The Leafs have to be, you know, overjoyed with that. And quite frankly, this is what Dubas and Shanahan and all the Leafs brass said when they signed these big, the Tavares, Marner, Matthews deals. They said, it's now incumbent on us to find value elsewhere, whether it was the Tyler Ennis's of the world, or whether it's going to be the Wayne Simmons of the world, or the Joe Thornton's of the world, et cetera. You've got to find these guys, low risk, high possible reward, and hope they fit in into this framework where you have these incredibly high paid, trio of forwards. So this is another peg. Is another guy, again, I imagine him as a top six forward, potentially playing with the likes of Nylander and Tavares. I mean, that would be really, really a good fit, provided he could do it over an 82-game schedule. We're going to have a compressed schedule, so you won't have to do it in the first year over an 82-game schedule. This guy can be brilliant for 3-4 months. It's incredible value for the Leafs.
Only a couple minutes left. We talking about the East right now. You have the Sens, Sabres, Habs, Leafs all making moves, and then you have the Bruins that you lose Krug, you lose... You know, you don't win, you don't get in on Ekman-Larsson. Not certain what's happened with Chara. Rask is up in the air. What have you guys thought so far about, you know, about the Bruins not really kind of keeping up with what the East has been doing?
Well, my thoughts are that, hey, Toronto might be actually able to catch the Boston Bruins this year, and then they're not even going to get the chance to, because there's going to be realignment, and they're going to end up in some Canadian division. It's actually, depending on how you felt about the Leafs offseason, I'm quite bullish on it. I really like the, you know, all of a sudden their defense looks like a really good defense to me, and I don't think their bottom six is much worse, so I quite like their offseason. I think Tampa's going to have to get a little bit worse. I think Boston is almost definitely going to be a little bit worse, so I liked how they were shaping up in that Atlantic division. I am fascinated to see what happens if it becomes a Canadian division. All of a sudden they're playing, you know, some lesser teams, to put it nicely, because there are some teams in Canada that have some question marks.
Oh, I disagree, Justin. I think the Canadian division would be the strongest of the four divisions. I mean, quite frankly. Yeah, I mean, aside from Ottawa, tell me what you don't think is a playoff team. When you look at up and down that roster, when you look at Edmonton, and I know there's question marks in Edmonton, but when you have arguably the two best players in the game or two of the top five players in the game, I'm not going to bet against that. I'm just not going to. You look what Calgary's done in adding Markstrom, adding Tanev. They've improved appreciably. Vancouver, yes, they haven't maybe improved their team. They certainly lost some pieces with Toffoli, et cetera. But having said that, you know, they still have a great young nucleus, and they made some noise last year. And if Thatcher Demko could be anything close to what he was in that short playoff appearance, my goodness. And they've added Holtby, who's a Stanley Cup winner. Winnipeg clearly has a great nucleus of young players. I still like what they have. And then Montreal, I think, might be the most improved team, at least on paper. And hats off to Mark Bergevin. Look at all the additions he's made, not just re-signing Petrie, re-signing Gallagher to reasonable deals, but when you go out and you add Toffoli, you get Josh Anderson in that trade, you add Edmondson. I like what Montreal's done. You have some support with Jake Allen now with Carey Price in that. I think that Canadian division would be very, very tough, and it's almost, you started it out by saying it's too bad they don't get to go up against Boston, and you're right. I think that would be, you know, Boston of all the teams, I think, has had as difficult an offseason as anyone, because they clearly have gotten worse. Torrey Krug's gone now, and they still have to figure out the Jake DeBrusk situation.
Justin Bourne, David Amber, Hockey Central at 8:30. Guys, we'll do it again next week. Always good to hear your voices. We'll get you set for good show next. Thanks to our guests, Justin Bourne, David Amber, Clark Judge, Tim Leeper, and Josh Toley. We are back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Alex Anthopoulos, the president of baseball operations of the Atlanta Braves, will be with us at 8 o'clock tomorrow. Good show is next. Enjoy your rainy Thursday.